Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So tonight we are going to discuss Nrisimhadeva. How many of you have, and please don't be shy, this is important for me to be able to know how to speak to you. How many of you have never heard of Nrisimha or Nrisimhadeva? Okay. How many of you have come to a gathering like this for the first time? Good. Very good, welcome. And what inspired you to come here?
I felt drawn to be here. I felt interested to look up the information. And somebody else, I reached out and somebody else recommended it also.
Okay. So.
And I was tagging along with her.
He's my dad. We both wanted to come.
Okay. And there was someone else who hadn't, a couple of others who had not heard of Nrisimhadeva. Okay. So, I'm going to start at the beginning of the, you could say, philosophical or spiritual background to the discussion. There are different elements that come into play in this narration. But the basic principle is that the living being is not the body, but is the soul or the atma within the body. And that atma is a tiny fragmental part of the Supreme Soul. And the both the Supreme Soul and the individual soul are persons. There is a school of thought which is not supported in Vedic literature or culture, that ultimately the individual soul is meant to merge and become one with some impersonal light. And then there's another similar idea, which is that that the individual person is meant to ultimately give up its individual existence and enter into a void. So these ideas are not supported in the Bhagavad Gita or other Vedic literatures. Our idea is that we are persons eternally, and God is the Supreme Person eternally, and our goal in life and our happiness in life will come from reviving our eternal relationship of loving service to God or Krishna. So, as in any study, there are books of different degrees of advancement. And in the progression of the main Vedic texts, the first is Ishopanishad, then the Bhagavad Gita, and then Srimad Bhagavatam. And tonight's topic is from Srimad Bhagavatam, so it's quite advanced. But I'm sure you'll be able to appreciate it. So, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is one very important verse, well, two. I mean, there's actually many, but one explains that the absolute truth, and the absolute truth is defined as that from which or from whom everything emanates. And that absolute truth can be realized in three features: as the impersonal light, as the called Brahman, as the localized Paramatma, which is the Lord within the heart of every living being, actually within every atom and even in the space within the atoms and between the atoms. And then Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so realization of Brahman is realization of Sat, the eternal feature of God. Paramatma is Sat and Chit, which is eternity and knowledge. And Bhagavan is realization of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And bliss is what everyone really wants. And that can be realized only in loving relationship with God, or Krishna. And now I'm saying Krishna, and you're nodding your head, which is good. But Krishna, I could explain the name Krishna, but I won't do that right now. But Srimad Bhagavatam lists different avatars, or you could say forms of Godhead. And at the end of the list, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Ete Chamsa Kalapumsam, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Which means that all of the names within the list are plenary portions of the Godhead, or portions of plenary portions. But Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, but Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a big science. It's a big science. Science of God. So, in that list, one of the forms is Nisringa. And this particular form is especially known because we're talking about persons, and persons have their natures. Even within the Godhead, different forms of the Lord have different natures. And the particular quality of Nisringadev is that he protects his devotees. I mean, every form of God does, but Nisringa is especially known for giving protection to his devotees. And that reputation comes from the story of Nisringa and Prahlad. Prahlad was the son of a great tyrant named Hiranyakasipu. Now, if you're anything like me, you'll have a hard time keeping track of what names refer to what personalities. So maybe we'll just refer to the father of the tyrant and the son. But Nisringa will keep Nisringa. So I'm going to read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam with a commentary by the person who brought this knowledge from India to the West. It's the founder of our society and the guru of some of us directly, and definitely the guru of everyone indirectly. Are there some books there?
Yes, there are.
Could you? So the whole story of Prahlad and Nisringa is told in the seventh canto in many chapters. It's hundreds of pages. But here there's a summary in one verse, and with the commentary, one page. But yes. So, we'll be a little interactive here. So please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 That is a sacred invocation that has been vibrated by sages and saintly persons for thousands of years. Don't you feel you're in an assembly of great sages and saintly persons? And every verse is actually a mantra. Just hearing the vibration is purifying and liberating, even if you don't understand the meaning. Tripistaporubhaya sanashringarupam kritva brahmadburukuti damstrakaralavatram daitendram ashugadaya vipatantamarad uro nipatya vidadaranakai spurantam. Translation. The personality of Godhead assumed the incarnation of Nrisimhadev in order to vanquish the great fears of the demigods. He killed the king of the demons, Hiranyakasipu, who challenged the Lord with a club in his hand by placing the demon on his thighs and piercing him with his nails, rolling his eyebrows in anger and showing his fearful teeth and mouth. Sounds pretty ghastly, doesn't it? So, in the science of bhakti, there are five direct relationships with the Lord, which are favorable, loving relationships. And there are seven indirect, which are not in and of themselves loving and favorable, but they can be combined with the loving, favorable ones. And one of those 12 is ghastly. Because everything in this world exists originally in the spiritual world, in the Godhead. But in the material world, it exists in a shadow or a reflection. And generally in the material world, everything is upside down. In the spiritual world, everyone wants to serve God and glorify God and please God. And in the material world, it's just the opposite. We actually want to be in the place of God. And we want people to praise us, serve us, please us. So, and often there's a conflict between those who want to serve God and those who want to take the place of God. And that's like the basis of this story, history. I'll continue reading. This is the purport, or like the essence of the verse by Śrīla Prabhupāda. The history of Hiranyakasipu and his great devotee son Prahlad Maharaj is narrated in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Hiranyakasipu became very powerful by material achievements and thought himself to be immortal by the grace of Brahmaji. So, Hiranyakasipu, he's the king, the tyrant. He did very severe austerities. And anyone who does austerities can get power. And power is like anything else. It can be used for good purposes or for bad purposes. And so he wanted powers to use for bad purpose, basically to exploit and control others. And so Brahma, who's one of the demigods are devoted to God, and they're powerful. They're like the controllers of the universe. Just like in the state, there may be a king, and then the king will have different ministers, and the ministers are in charge of different departments. So Krishna is like the king, and these demigods, say like Brahma, he's in charge of creation, Shiva is in charge of destruction, Saraswati is in charge of learning and music and culture. And then there are also demigods in charge of different, you could say geographical areas, different planets. And so Brahma is one of the demigods. And so Nrisingadev, so Hiranyakasipu, he did these austerities, and as a result, Brahma came to fulfill his desires. So what he wanted really was to become immortal, deathless. But Brahma, all the demigods in the material world, they're also mortal. So Brahma said, I cannot make you immortal, because I myself am mortal. So Hiranyakasipu thought, okay, well, he won't make me immortal, but I will place such conditions that it will be the same as being immortal. And this is also the nature of materialistic people, godless materialistic people, is they think they can outwit God, outsmart God, trick God or cheat God. So he said, I want the benediction that I will die neither in the day or at night. So Brahma granted, so be it. And I want the boon that I will not be killed inside of any building or outside of any building. So be it. And I want the boon that I will not be killed by any human being by any man or animal. So be it. And in this way, he placed many conditions, and Lord Brahma granted all of his desires, and he thought that he was immortal. He thought, in effect, he was immortal. Oh yes, another one was that he would not be killed by any weapon. So be it. Like that. And thinking he was immortal, and he was very powerful because of his austerities. He went about, you could say, waging war everywhere and conquering to to the point that he this is on a cosmic scale, and he basically had control of the planets in the universe. There's a similar story I heard, similar in a way, about Adolf Hitler. I think everyone must have heard that name. Have you heard that name?
Yes.
Too bad, but that's the way, that's the reality of life. Not too bad that you heard his name, but too bad that he did what he did. But I heard that someone planted a bomb to kill him. And he was at a conference table, and the bomb was placed, I guess, near one of the supports of the table. And somehow the bomb, I think it went off, but it didn't harm him because of the way it was placed. And somehow Hitler took it that this was a sign, you know, that he's invincible, that it's like, it's destined, you know, that he will conquer and nothing will be able to touch him. So that was Hiranyakasipu's mood. And the one thing that the Lord cannot tolerate is persecution or torture or pain inflicted on a devotee, especially if fully purified and surrendered devotee. So, Hiranyakasipu, you know who he is now. Yeah. So Hiranyakasipu, he had this son named Prahlad. And he was raising Prahlad to become like him, you know, to be a powerful ruler. And so he was having him learn all about politics and diplomacy and warfare. And so one day, you know, Hiranyakasipu, even though he was a demon, he had affection for his son. I mean, that even in mafia families, it's natural. Even animals, they have affection for their offspring. So he had affection for Prahlad. And so one day he called him. He's 5 years old, the boy. And he asked, what is the best thing that you have learned in school? Like we always often ask. So, what's your favorite subject? So, Prahlad said, service to Vishnu, Krishna. And when the father heard this answer, he became very alarmed and furious. But he didn't blame his son, but he was furious that how could his son know about Vishnu? There's some history to that also, but Hiranyakasipu considered Vishnu, which is like the name of Krishna, to be his enemy. Because he had killed his brother. These are all things on a cosmic scale. So, he called the teachers and he said, the intelligence of my son has been polluted with devotion to Vishnu, and you're to blame. how has he got this knowledge? And they said, we are not to blame. That yes, you have taught him this. No, we haven't taught him this. Well, then you're letting devotees in disguise infiltrate. No, we have not allowed any devotees to infiltrate. So then he said, well, then where did he get this devotion to Vishnu? They said, we don't know. You better ask him. So Hiranyakasipu asked Prahlad, you know, where did you get this? And Prahlad said, Nalshamatistavad Arukramangrim. He basically said that one cannot get devotion to God by one's own efforts. And one cannot get devotion to God by the efforts of others. And one cannot get devotion to God by the combined efforts of oneself and others. So it seems to eliminate all logical possibilities. And then he said, that one can get devotion to God only by being blessed by the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee of the Lord who has no material attachments. And that is the truth. That is the truth. And indirectly, he was telling his father, you don't have to worry about becoming a devotee because you're too proud. You'll never bow down to the feet of any pure devotee. So you don't have to worry about becoming a devotee. So, but still there's a question, how did that come to Prahlad? And the answer is that during Hiranyakasipu's campaign to conquer in all directions, it's like that in warfare. You know, sometimes one side gets the upper hand, sometimes the other side gets the upper hand. So at this particular stage, the demigods, the faithful, they got the upper hand. And they captured Prahlad's mother while Prahlad was still in the womb. And at that stage, a great saintly person came who could, he knew that that boy, although he was born of a great demon, tyrant, he knew that the boy would become a great devotee. So he said, you let me keep this lady with me during the fighting. And so would you like to come closer? Sorry?
We can have some restaurant customers. They're on their way home.
Oh, okay.
We both invited them to check out the restaurant.
Okay, that's nice. Um, So this great saint named Narada took the pregnant wife of Hiranyakasipu to his ashram, and he instructed her in spiritual science. And Prahlad, within the womb, heard those instructions. And this is also a very important point, that because the real person is the soul, like we discussed, the body is just a covering. So that soul was hearing those instructions, and his fetus body was just a covering, and his mother's belly was just, they were just coverings, but they didn't obstruct the transcendental sound from reaching him. And that's the mystery, how he became a devotee, because you can only become a devotee by the association of another devotee, and in particular by accepting a pure devotee as one's spiritual master, preceptor. So that happened when Prahlad was in the womb. So after the fighting ended, Hiranyakasipu was victorious, and his wife was returned to him. And Prahlad took birth, and he became a great devotee of God, who Hiranyakasipu considered to be his enemy. So when Prahlad gave this answer to Hiranyakasipu, he became even more furious. And he knew that he had no one else to blame. And so he underwent a campaign to kill Prahlad, to kill his own son, which sounds really terrible. But we do have that nowadays too, in the form of abortion. Not to get into any sort of political controversy or discussion, but that's what it comes to, killing your own child. So he tried many ways to kill him. And here's someone who he was like conquering in all directions. No one could stand up to him. And Prahlad, not only could Hiranyakasipu not kill him, he couldn't even disturb him. The boy remained totally calm and peaceful in every situation. He just remembered the Lord, and he was completely happy and blissful. So after trying numerous ways of killing him, you know, administering poison. I mean, there's a whole list. The boy wouldn't die, and he didn't lose his equanimity. He just remained wrapped in remembrance of God. So finally, Hiranyakasipu said, Where do you get your power from? You know, because Hiranyakasipu was the most powerful man in the universe, other than, you know, Brahma and Shiva. But where do you get your power from? And Prahlad said, I get my power from the same source that you get your power. And that also outraged him, because he thought, I got my power because of my austerities, you know, because of my, I didn't get. So then, and probably I get my power from the same place you get your power, from God. So that was it. Hiranyakasipu couldn't tolerate that. So then he said, all right, where is this God of yours? He said, he's everywhere. So Hiranyakasipu took out his sword, and there was like a column just at the beginning of the assembly hall of the palace. So he said, okay, your God is everywhere. Is he in this pillar? And Prahlad said, yes, he is. He said, okay, I'm going to kill your God. So he took out his sword with his immense strength, and he like smashed the pillar. And out of the pillar emerged this ferocious form. On occasion, I sometimes make a roaring sound when I tell the story, but I don't want to frighten you gentle folks. But he came out of the pillar and he was like growling like a lion. And, he took this huge demon. I mean, there was some playing with him. It was like a lion might play with a mouse, you know. And the mouse is thinking, oh, you know, he's not able to kill me, but he's just playing with him. And Hiranyakasipu really, he thought, you know, he was so intoxicated with his power, he thought, you know, that he was a match for Nrisimhadeva. And then Nrisimhadeva picked up his body, put him on his lap, and with his nails, it's mentioned he's like half man and half lion. With his nails, he like tore open his body, and took out his heart, and anyway, well, it, I mean, ghastly is a type of, but we won't go too much into the ghastly, but he tore him open and took out his heart, and in the course of that, Hiranyakasipu's blood was splattered everywhere. And so, because Brahma is a devotee of Krishna, it is a very important principle of Krishna's to uphold the word of his devotee. If his devotee makes a promise, he always upholds it. So he assumed this form and killed Hiranyakasipu, but he did it in such a way as to keep all of the boons that Brahma had given intact. So Hiranyakasipu, he had the boon that he would not be killed inside or outside, but he was killed just at the threshold. He had the boon that he would not be killed during day or night, but he was killed just at twilight, which was neither day nor night. He got the boon that he would not be killed on the land, on water, or in this guy. He was killed on the Lord's land. He had the boon that he would not be killed by any man or beast. And he was killed by Nrisimhadev, who had the form that was half man and half lion. He had the boon that he would not be killed by any weapon. But he was killed by the nails. So this illustrates that no matter how great our intelligence is, God's intelligence is greater. He thought, he could outsmart God, but God outsmarted him. So after he killed Hiranyakasipu, the Lord's anger did not subside. Now this might also seem odd that God could become angry, but again, if we consider that God is the origin of everything, so that means that everything we have must be in God also. But in us, it can be in an egoistic, materialistic form. Whereas in God, it's in a pure, benevolent form. And because God is absolute, even the demons he kills, they get liberated. Because he's absolute. So, Prahlad... So Nrisimhadev was still angry. And no one could pacify him. I mean, when the Lord appeared, so all the demigods came, Brahma, Shiva, all the demigods, all the great sages and saintly persons. And only Prahlad, he could pacify the Lord. The Lord was so affectionate towards him. He appeared for his sake, really. And then he offered many, wonderful, beautiful prayers to the Lord. So this is a very important pastime. It has many lessons. And the original telling is... comprises many chapters, the Srimad Bhagavatam with many beautiful prayers and philosophical truths. But at the end, Nrisimhadev asked Prahlad to take some benediction. And Prahlad refused. He said, why should you tempt me with material things? I've seen my father. He had everything material. And he still wasn't happy. So why should you tempt me with material things? And then he said that, I worship you and I serve you without any desire for anything in return for myself. I do it just because you're my master and I'm your servant. If I were to serve you to get something in return, I would be no better than a vanik, which means a merchant, making business with you. I don't want to make business with you. There are many people who, they go to the church or the temple or the mosque, but to get something from God. It's not pure. Some selfish motive is there. Prahlad said, I don't want to make business with you. But Nrsingadev, out of his love for Prahlad, wanted to give him something. And he was also insisting. And then Prahlad said, well, if you want to show me some favor, then I ask that you purify my father and forgive him for all of his horrible activities and liberate him. And this shows the saintly nature of a pure devotee, that he's friend to everyone. He doesn't become his enemy's enemy. He remains friend even to his enemy, so-called enemy. And Nrsingadev replied that because of your taking birth in this family, 21 generations of your family are liberated. Now, this is also a very important point for devotees, because, you know, devotees are naturally kind-hearted, but often when they take up the path of pure devotional service, their parents might not like it. There could be many reasons, but they might not like it. And again, the devotee, being, you know, kind-hearted, doesn't want to cause pain to his parents or other relatives and loved ones. But at the same time, he cannot deny his calling as a soul, you know, to the service of the Supreme. So this is an assurance to a devotee that even if, you know, one's family members are not happy that one has become a devotee, but just by virtue of the devotee's becoming a surrendered soul, the family members all benefit, even if they're not aware of it. And there are so many instances of parents of devotees who, at the time of their deaths, had very auspicious passing. My parents are examples, but there are so many, so many. And and our teacher, Srila Prabhupada, said that the parents of my disciples will realize their good fortune at the time of their passing away, even if they don't realize it during their lifetime, which they might not, but they do at the time of their passing away. So this is also a very, very important point. Of course, we are polite with them. Prahlad was certainly very polite with his father. I mean, he didn't give up his devotion to Vishnu, but he was very polite to his father. But still, his father didn't like it, what Prahlad was doing. But in the end, the father did get the benefit. So, I think the one small point I will add is that the awakening of one's devotion to God, as we heard, it's only possible when one surrenders to the lotus feet of a pure devotee. But what does that mean? It mainly means to accept the instructions of a pure devotee. And the pure devotee, he also doesn't make up his own philosophy or his own process, but he repeats what Krishna has said in the Bhagavad Gita. And so, in there are many processes, but the two primary processes are hearing, which you've all been doing. You've been hearing. And chanting. And chanting means repeating what you've heard. It's actually very simple. And the chanting and the hearing can be of the Lord's name, of beauty, qualities, activities, associates, and so we can hear about all these things and chant them. But everything is included in the name. If you, for example, if you love someone, you just hear their name. Or the other day gave the example. Anyway. So just by hearing the name, you remember the person, everything about the person. And so the chanting of the name is the most essential item. And God is all attractive. In one sense, God has no name, but he does have his forms and qualities and activities and relationships with his devotees, so he can be known by those. We call them. But whatever those are, they're attractive. And the name Krishna means all attractive. Therefore, the name Krishna is considered the best name because it includes all of Krishna's qualities and activities, which are all attractive. And Krishna's name appears in a mantra, or I could say there's a mantra called the Maha Mantra. Maha means great, and mantra means, you could say, chant for deliverance. And so that is the most, you could say, essential process. But they're all in a way equally good, but this you can do on your own at any time in any place. And that's the chanting of this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we can go through that mantra once. But before we do, are you okay with everything so far? Good. Okay. So then, we'll start with two words at a time, then four, then eight. Depending on how that goes, maybe 16. But eight is good. All right. So, and so please repeat. And we'll raise our arms like calling out to God. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama, Rama.
Rama, Rama.
Hari, Hari.
Hari, Hari.
Good. So now we'll do four. It's okay. It happens. So now four words. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Rama, Rama, Hare Hare.
Rama, Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, good. And now we will do eight. Repeat after me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
You owe me $30, ma'am. The next time it happens, it'll be $60. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Excellent. Now, is there anyone here who would like to take a try at saying the mantra who didn't know the mantra before tonight? Or we can do it like this. I think you could do two words, the first two words. Any volunteers? You can say the first two words. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Those are actually the, you repeat those, you get the first four words. Yeah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Sort of a nice arrangement then. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, then Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. So do any of you wise sages have any questions or comments?
Could I just ask what you're reading from? Is that the book that's available to all of us?
Yes, yes. I was reading from a book called Srimad Bhagavatam, which is really good. But a more basic book is the Bhagavad Gita. So if you were going to begin with one, I would probably suggest the Bhagavad Gita. But Vedic literatures are in harmony with each other. It's like one, like in mathematics, you know, there's basic arithmetic, you know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and then there's, I guess, trigonometry and calculus, but the principles in basic arithmetic are valid in the more advanced types of mathematics as well. So the principles in the Bhagavad Gita are valid in all the other books, but still the others are considered more advanced. But you know, they're all, in one sense, they're all the same, because they're all Krishna. They're all manifestations of Krishna, and Krishna's absolute. But in terms of a general sequence of study, begin with Ishopanishad, that's a small book. That's really beautiful. That's like only 18 verses or mantras. Then the Bhagavad Gita, 700, which isn't that much. And then Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000. So, that's a very good question, how to get these books. Any other questions? Yes? Oh. Okay. Parameshwar?
I was just wondering why the repeats, like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, why is this Hare Krishna wrong? Do you know why? It's a tough question.
No, I'm not clear what the question is. The
question is, why is the repetition? Why not just Hare Krishna wrong?
Oh, why the repetition?
Instead of Hare Krishna, then repeating it, Hare Krishna, and then Krishna, Krishna, Hare. Is there a reason why it's the mantra is that way instead of just saying the same word?
It's better that way. Yes, Krishna.
One question that came to my mind while you were speaking in terms of one who becomes a devotee, the generations back becomes liberated. That makes sense to me, but I'd also heard the generations to come, and I'm not sure if you could clarify that. If the generations that follow you, like your offspring and down, they also gain liberation. I'm not sure if my question is clear.
Well, that's a good. That's a good point. I think that they would certainly benefit. They would certainly benefit. But our emphasis in relation to parents. And it's in Srimad Bhagavatam. Is to train your offspring in such a way that he or she never has to take birth again. Now, in the purport to that verse, Srila Prabhupada says that you know, one must be very responsible. You know, one must execute one's duties as a parent. Or a teacher, or a husband, or a ruler. One has to execute those duties very responsibly in such a way that his dependent never has to take birth again. And Srila Prabhupada said that one can be free from the cycle of birth and death only if one becomes a pure devotee. And so the parents themselves should be pure devotees, and they should raise their children to be pure devotees. Of course, it is true that if you're a pure devotee and you pray for the welfare of your spouse or your children, then your prayer will help. You know, Krishna may do that for you, but mainly we want to, you know, give such instructions and set such an example that the children become pure devotees themselves. Yes?
Probably a too basic a question, but you don't mention the word spirit at all. Is there a reason for that?
No. I wasn't aware that I hadn't, but it's not a word that we avoid at all. It's a word that we use quite frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I said soul or atma. Quite often we say spirit soul. You know, I said supreme soul. Sometimes we say supreme spirit. We're fine with with the word spirit. In that sense, we don't drink spirits. and we don't go out of our way to associate with ghostly spirits, but spirit as in spiritual, we like the spirit of that spirit. Are there any other questions or comments?
In the Bhagavad Gita, I'm reminded of the verse Hitamasya. So Krishna states that whenever there's a rise in irreligion, a decline in religious principles, that he incarnates to protect the faithful and to annihilate the demons.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that, you know, we're in one of those times right now. We look around the world and see how the leaders are treating, you know, sometimes their own citizens. And of course, the animals, which are also citizens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is? Are we to expect an incarnation of the Lord soon?
That's a good question. He's quoting a verse from the Bhagavad Gita: "Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata." That when there's a decline in religiousness and a predominant increase in irreligiousness. To reestablish the principles of religion, the Lord appears. And there's another one. So he's saying that, you know, looking at the condition of the world now, it would seem that the conditions exist in which the Lord should appear. So he's saying, can we expect an incarnation soon? Well, there's some good news here, and that is Kale Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar, that in the age, in this present age, which is called Kali Yuga, the incarnation of Krishna is the holy name of Krishna. So, Kale Kaler Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar. So he is present in his holy name. And he and so the more we chant, you know, either in the temple or in the street or, you know, at festivals or even through recordings and the more we invoke Krishna's presence. I mean, it's not like even with Nrisimhadev, it's not that there was no suffering. I mean, yes, he came to protect Prahlad, and anyone who surrenders to the holy name the way Prahlad surrendered to Nrisimhadev will get the same protection from that form of Krishna as Prahlad got from Nrisimhadev. Yeah, that's a good question. Yes?
How can we become a pure devotee?
That is a good question. Because I've used...
What did you say?
How can one become a pure devotee? I've used the phrase pure devotee. And that's a crucial phrase. So, I'll come back to a very important definition which describes pure devotion. And that will indirectly, well, not, it'll answer your question because a pure devotee is one who has pure devotion. And there are different elements to this definition. So, anyavilasita-sunyam. Anyavilasita-sunyam means that one should not have any other desire. And we'll come back to that in a little more detail. Anyavilasita-sunyam. Jnana-karmadi-anavritam. And one's devotional service, that bhakti yoga, devotional service means bhakti yoga, one's bhakti yoga should not be covered by karma, which means fruitive work, working for some personal benefit. Jnana, that means impersonal speculation that we discussed with the idea of merging and becoming one with some spiritual light, etc. Adi means, you could say, etc. And that includes anything else, yogic gymnastics, charity, all sorts of things those things are not bad in and of themselves. But jnana karmadi anavritam means that our practice of bhakti should not be covered by these activities. In other words, those activities can be used in support of bhakti, but they shouldn't cover bhakti. And we shouldn't think that bhakti depends on them. So, anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena. Now, this is a very important word. Anu means either continuous or to follow. So, and anushilanam. So anushilanam means either continuous cultivation or cultivation following the authorities. Bhakti uttama, that is pure devotional service. Now, there are different stages of maturity in the practice of pure devotional service. There's sadhana bhakti, which is devotional service in practice. There's bhava bhakti, which is devotional service in ecstasy. And then there's prema bhakti, which is devotional service in pure love of Godhead. But they can all be, it's a maturation of the same thing. So every one of you could be a pure devotee, even though you're not mature in your practice. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of a mango, an unripe mango and a ripe mango. They're both mangoes. But the unripe mango, green and hard and sour. And the ripe mango is whatever, reddish, let's say, reddish, orange and sweet and juicy. But the unripe mango, as long as it stays connected to the tree, will become a ripe mango. So even though one may not be mature in one's practice, he can still be considered a pure devotee if he's not engaging in devotional service to get something material for himself or to merge and become one with God or something like that. And if he doesn't mix his practice with bhakti yoga with other practices, thinking that they're superior or necessary. And, in simple language, Srila Prabhupada said that, anyone who is surrendered to the spiritual master, you know, who strictly follows the instructions of the spiritual master, is a pure devotee. Does that answer your question? Good.
The best book is the one that you are talking about. The big one.
The Bhagavad Gita?
Uh-huh. To start with.
That's a good one. They're all the best. Do we have any other questions or comments from this assembly of wise sages? Yes?
If you don't have a spiritual master to follow, you mentioned if you're following the instructions of a spiritual master, that you're on the way to becoming a pure devotee or a pure devotee. If you don't have a spiritual master, how do you get your instructions?
That's a very good question. These questions are bringing out all the truths of the scriptures. The original spiritual master is Krishna. And Krishna has given instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. And any other spiritual master must come in the line of Krishna. And there are different lineages coming from Krishna. We're in one of those lineages, in a way the most, but it might sound like I'm being proud or sectarian, but I could explain it. So we're coming in one of those lineages, which is especially significant as a lineage, because within this lineage comes Krishna, who came again 500 years ago as Lord Chaitanya. But even otherwise, we take it as one of the lineages. So there's a list. There's a list in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna spoke to A spoke to B, B spoke to C, and there's a line, an unbroken chain that's coming to us. So Krishna is our guru, and all of the preceptors in the line who are repeating the message of Krishna, explaining the message of Krishna, elaborating on the message of Krishna, they're also our gurus. And then there's Srila Prabhupada, who has brought all of the, you know, knowledge of the previous gurus in the line, beginning with Krishna, to us. So if you follow those instructions, Srila Prabhupada's instructions, even the instructions of his followers who are repeating his instructions, so that's how you get guidance. The sadhu shastra guru vakya is sadhus, that means saintly persons, and it includes the previous teachers. Sadhu shastra, the sacred texts, and guru, which can usually mean your personal guru, but in a broader sense it can include, you know, previous teachers in the line. So no one begins with a personal spiritual master. Everyone starts like you or me, you know. Ado Shraddha, one develops some preliminary faith and attraction to Ta Sadhu Sangha, then we begin to associate with devotees. And then, Bhajana Kriya, that means we engage in the systematic practice of Bhakti Yoga. And at that stage, one one, you know, may take initiation from a personal spiritual master. But the process begins before then, and the guidance exists. Otherwise, how could you begin? So you get it from the devotees, from the books. Thank you. Those are such good questions. It's like a retelling of Srimad Bhagavatam. All the books, they're like questions and answers. Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna's asking, Krishna's answering. Srimad Bhagavatam, questions and answers. So, I'm going to give like a 2-minute introduction to the next item, which is prasad. Prasad literally means mercy, and in this context it refers to food that's offered with love and devotion to God. And then in that process the food becomes sanctified or spiritualized, and then we take the remnants as prasad. And so that food has spiritual potency. And in that history of Prahlad, his father tried to kill him in so many ways. So his father also tried to poison him. But that poisoned food, Prahlad offered to Krishna, how we offer. And Krishna, I mean, because he's all powerful and he doesn't really need anything, but he appreciates our love and devotion. So when we offer food to him, he accepts is the love and devotion. So Prahlad offered that and Krishna accepted it. But as we were saying, to really, you know, if you want to please God, you have to know what he wants. And he tells us what he wants in the Bhagavad Gita and so on. And so we know from the Bhagavad Gita that we can't offer Krishna like meat or fish or eggs, or there's a number of things that we don't offer. So, but even poison, you know, if it's a, you know, but we, so we're going to be having prasad now, and it's a very important part of this process, because the idea is that whatever we do, we should do for God, in relation to God. So eating is one of the things that we all do. So that is also spiritualized by cooking in the consciousness that I'm going to offer this to God. I'm cooking it for God's pleasure. And then after he's accepted it or eaten it, then we eat the remnants, and what's left is really, I mean, sometimes there are cases where God actually consumes it and he doesn't leave anything, but that could be a little frustrating for some. So he does eat it, but he also leaves it. But what he leaves is a more, it's a sanctified, spiritualized, Krishnaized version of what we offered him. So that's coming next. Or, so are we going to serve now, or should we have a little? Okay. So we'll say one more Hare Krishna. There's prayers for the prasad, but we'll say one more Hare Krishna mantra, because all prayers and all mantras are included in Hare Krishna.
Sure. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.